I'd like now to welcome Vicki Harrison. She's Executive Director of Common Cause New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation.
We are here today talking about the public financing of campaigns, specifically municipal campaigns here in Santa Fe. In 2008, the voters of Santa Fe approved a public financing measure. What did that measure say? What did it do?
What it allowed, Mary Charlotte, was for candidates for municipal races, whether they were councilors, municipal judges, or mayor, they could collect $5 contributions and a certain number of signatures from the people in their district and then be allowed to use public funds to run their campaigns in exchange for agreeing not to raise other money.
And so how has it been used since then? Has it been used a lot? Are people choosing public versus private financing?
They certainly are. It was passed in 08. It became effective in 09, and it was decided that it would not be used until 2012 and use it first for a city council race to make sure there were no kinks. And I believe that first year we had with the city council, there were 10 candidates, and I believe six of them took public financing, and there were four seats open. Three of those were won by publicly financed candidates. And then, of course, last year was the first time that the mayor's race used it, and all three mayoral candidates and nearly every single city councilor candidate, except for a handful, took public financing. And we only had one privately financed candidate win.
So three out of the four mayoral candidates used it.
Right.
So this is the question that I have and that many people have, which is, it doesn't seem like it would necessarily level the playing field unless everyone uses it. If you have a candidate with donors and political action committees who have a lot of money, then are we not still dealing with the same problem of the influence of money in politics?
Absolutely. And that is the critical part of this proposal that we have supported from the ECRB that is in front of the council right now.
What is the ECRB?
It's the Ethics and Campaign Review Board here in Santa Fe. And every 2 years, they're tasked with looking at the campaign finance laws in the city and making recommendations to the city council. And so one of their recommendations, because in the old days, the way this system was designed, if you had a privately financed candidate running against you and you were publicly financed, and let's say you got to that first reporting period and they had outraised and outspent you, that would then trigger matching funds for you as a publicly financed candidate. And that piece of most public finance laws around the country was struck down by the Supreme Court in 2011 in a case called Arizona Free Enterprise. And it upheld the first part of public financing that I mentioned a minute ago, collecting $5 and signatures. But it said that you can't give somebody more money based on what the private guy is raising. So this proposal from the Ethics and Campaign Review Board would allow the publicly financed candidate to raise $100, no more, up to $100, and have that matched by the fund by a 4-to-1 basis, so they can stay competitive against the PACs or the privately financed candidates.
Tell us more about this 2011 Supreme Court decision. What was at issue, and why did it go the way it did? I mean, is this another kind of Citizens United type of thing?
Bingo! It's exactly. In fact, it was the year after Citizens United, and so those of us in this world knew that it was coming. There's actually a federal bill drafted called Fair Elections Now Act that we modeled this proposal off of, because we knew that once Citizens United came down the pike and said, you know, people raising money that's protected because that's free speech, we knew that going into public financing, because we were giving the publicly financed candidate more money based on what the private candidate was raising. So we knew that that was going to be a problem. And that was directly related to and following the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. Because if money is speech, and this guy is over here raising all his money, also known as speech. It's not fair to give somebody else some speech for free. And if your listeners are pulling their hair out right now, they should be, because what I just said, while true, is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like what's really underneath it is a concerted effort not to level the playing field between those candidates who are backed by large moneyed interests and those who aren't.
Well, and it's just really frustrating for the average American citizen, because they can look at this and they say, of course this makes sense. I mean, the poll numbers that we get on our issues in New Mexico are out of this world. I mean, you know, poll numbers in the 80s and 90s, because no matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, a Green, a DTS, you know that this much money in politics is not good for the health of our democracy.
When you're doing that kind of polling, what questions are you asking that you're getting such a lopsided response?
We asked one question earlier this year. Do you support requiring people who spend money in elections, the nonprofits, the unions, the PACs, do you support them having to disclose where that money comes from? And that 92% of the state supports that, from the east to the west, north, south, Republicans, Democrats. And yet that's a bill we've been working on statewide with Senator Peter Wirth for 5 years, and it still hasn't passed.
It points out something that I think is really important to talk about, which is the difference between the electorate and the officials that they elect, the people who are actually in public office. It doesn't seem like it should be that way, but for the exact reasons that we're talking about, there's a disconnect between what people want and whom they elect.
There is such a huge disconnect. And with our issues around campaign finance, you know, we're always an easy scapegoat, because people can run out of time, you know, especially with the legislative sessions. Oh, we ran out of time again. And, you know, whereas I say that if this was important, and it's obviously important to the citizens of New Mexico, then it would be done in the first week instead of listening to memorials and watching people dance. But that's what we do for the first month of the session. Sure. And, you know, I mean, the other kinds of questions, Mary Shelter, independent redistricting. That Santa Fe has an independent redistricting commission. The state, we've been working on that for 2 decades, and we can't even get out of the first committee. Yet, meanwhile, over 80% of the state, Republicans and Democrats, support an independent redistricting commission, but we can't even get out of one committee.
So how do you understand that?
I understand it as a disconnect, because people feel like that elected officials do not listen to them. And in fact, another question we asked is basically, do you think politicians are corrupt? 9 in 10. 90% think that 9 out of 10 of our politicians are corrupt, which is insane, because 9 out of 10 politicians are certainly not corrupt. I mean, I would say that 1 in 100 might be a little sketchy, but not even really corrupt. But it's this perception that people have, and so they don't get as involved as they should. You know, you can't just vote and be done. Yet we spend all of our time trying to get people just to register and then just to vote. Well, that's just the beginning. And if you're having to talk people into registering or voting, that's not creating a healthy democracy. We need people who are going to hold their officials accountable once they've been elected. We need your listeners to be calling their counselors as soon as the show is over with and saying, fix public financing and improve disclosure and coordination in the city. Accept these proposals. That's what we need, to have the citizens actually get involved. If they would show up to a city council meeting or a legislative hearing and at the roundhouse, it would make all the difference in the world. But instead, it's just those of us who are the usual suspects and the high-powered lobbyists.
It's such tricky business, because campaigns, as they are dealt with in the media and in papers and, you know, all the different media and TV commercials and so on, they don't seem really straightforward. I mean, they are cast as horse races as opposed to issues about genuine things of concern to citizens. And so
exactly.
When you have campaigns that are so removed from the realities of people's actual lives, or when they're paying such superficial rhetoric to the issues of our actual lives, like people throw around the word jobs, but the reality is that we don't get those jobs and there's not even really clear thinking about how to make those good jobs or realistic thinking. So it seems like there's a kind of hesitation to really believe that the system works in the first place once the campaign is over.
Absolutely. Oh, and there's a reason why so many of our, particularly younger people, are not registered as a Democrat or a Republican in this state. Nearly 40% of people under the age of 24 are registered as either a declined state or an independent. That is enormous. That number was 2% just 35 years ago. And we're seeing this across the country when people are saying, and especially when you look at the demographics of those that are 18 to 24, they've never seen a functional Congress in their lives. They've seen these primaries that cater to the extreme of both parties and then wonder why we can't get anything done. So they're making the point and saying, I don't believe any of you guys. I think that I'm going to be an independent. I'm going to be a declined state. I don't even want to join the independent party. And it's because people are disillusioned. I certainly don't blame people for not becoming more involved because they're trying to live their lives. You know, you mentioned jobs. They may be trying to work a couple of jobs just to support themselves. They certainly can't take off in the middle of the day and go to a hearing in Santa Fe from Lordsburg. And so it's just not designed. Whereas what I do tell people, particularly with our state legislators, is with such short sessions, that means they're at home the other 10 or 11 months of the year. And so, you know, but you hit on a really huge problem is, you know, why do we see such low registration numbers? Why do we see such low voting numbers? I mean, you look at municipal elections and around the country, you see municipal elections with 20% and under of registered voters. And you only got half your people registered to begin with. So you're talking 10% of the adult population is voting. And it's very disturbing because, as you say, it's very much a catch-22. Okay, I'm going to get involved, but I already feel like everybody's sketchy to begin with. So I don't think the system we have is working for me.
It's a huge problem because there's so many facets to it. One of the things also is we're really not taught this in school. We don't really see the field trips of children going down to the state house or to their city halls or town halls and kind of getting their feet wet in the political process and in the electoral process. But even when adults try to do that, I mean, sometimes it works, but there is this sense some other times of people making their voices heard in front of what ends up being kind of a done deal.
Oh, absolutely. And that is very frustrating. And in fact, you know, one of the things that I do is a citizen lobbying training. And, you know, I do it for different organizations or just individuals and schools. And I unfortunately have to tell people, you know, you need to call them. If we're talking the legislature in January and February, you can't wait and show up to a hearing and that be the first time you've approached them with your idea. Because everybody else is having those discussions months ahead of time with them. And so you're right. They do feel disillusioned because you get there and you're like, wow, everybody already made up their mind. Or what's more frustrating is I'm finding in, they say that they're doing it because they're looking up research and such, is, you know, you're in front of too many elected bodies and they're all on their computer or phone instead of listening to testimony. And somebody brought that up in a hearing this year, and it really angered a lot of lawmakers because they said, we're looking up stuff, we're doing research, we're pulling up stuff while we're listening to you. But I think as an audience, that's not the perception when everybody's looking at their computer.
So let's get back to the question of public financing of campaigns, particularly municipal campaigns here in Santa Fe. So There is this Santa Fe Ethics and Campaign Review Board, as you mentioned before, whose job it is to oversee this financing law or ordinance, I guess, that was put into effect several years ago and has been used for the last 3 or 4 years. So what is the job of this Ethics and Review Board?
Well, they have several different things that they do, but one of them is to review campaign finance laws. They also do some enforcement as well, as you know, many people may remember last year when people had complaints in the election, they took it before the Ethics and Campaign Review Board. So they do a several different things. It's really a fascinating system and one that we, frankly, would love to see replicated across the state, because it really has somebody who's looking at those campaign finance laws every two years and, you know, as a place to go if there is an issue with any of this, which is very helpful.
So what are the issues that we're looking at now, given that this law has now been used and we've had some publicly financed campaigns?
Well, the big one is the matching funds that I mentioned earlier that has been struck down by the Supreme Court several years ago. So this proposal has a different type of match where it allows candidates to raise no more than $100, because we always say that, you know, you're taking public financing to keep influence out. And if somebody can be bought or influenced for $100, we've got much bigger issues than public financing. And so, you know, it allows them to raise, you know, a penny up to $100 and have that matched by the fund on a 4-to-1 basis if they find themselves in a situation where they need more than the initial stipend to fight off maybe a private candidate or a last-minute attack by a PAC or an independent group.
So there's now a proposal before the Santa Fe City Council.
Yeah, these are two proposals that the ECRB sent to the council last month. They're discussing them on the 29th.
So on the 29th of July, there is a city council meeting to discuss these recommendations. And so one of them would basically, in the face of this movement by the United States Supreme Court, restore the matching piece of the public financing.
Exactly, with one that can pass constitutional muster. And that's one of the proposals that would fix that public financing system. And both of these are being sponsored by Councilor Peter Ives. And then there's a second proposal that will tighten up the disclosure laws and provide some more guidance on coordination between PACs and candidates.
So that's another piece that we should talk about for a moment. There are these political action committees. So let's say John Doe is running for city council and he is raising money by himself and he also has a political action committee. Is he working directly with that political action committee, or how does it work? What are the rules?
Well, and that's what we're trying to tighten up right now, because, again, when you have that coordination, this proposal would treat that coordination as a contribution. So, therefore, if you were a publicly financed candidate, you couldn't accept more than $100. And if you're a privately financed candidate, I don't remember the exact number on that. I think it's $1,000 or maybe $2,500 for mayor. It's something completely outrageous. And so that's been the problem. And, of course, to make things even more confusing is we don't just have to deal with the Supreme Court. We also have the Tenth Circuit, which is the district court that runs New Mexico and a couple of other states. And they've gone even further than the Supreme Court on certain things. In fact, they just had a ruling about a year and a half ago that says PACs can be both coordinated and uncoordinated as long as they keep their money in two separate bank accounts. Now, that's a completely insane ruling, because a couple months later, the Second Circuit on the East Coast came out and said, that's crazy, you can't do that. But that's what our hands are tied with in New Mexico. So what we're trying to do with the coordination is clearly define how it can occur and expand those definitions of what a campaign-related service is, where that coordination can happen, which coordination could happen by you know, let's say we both hire the same campaign manager. The same campaign manager is running my campaign and the PAC's campaign. So there's obviously some issues going on there. And then create some boundaries, because we are a small state. And in a larger state, people are looking at saying, okay, well, in order to create some firewalls between the PAC and the candidates, they can't use the same sign company. They can't use the same strategic firm. Well, we can't do that in New Mexico because there aren't enough of these companies out there. So what we've asked for, and is detailed in the proposal that the ECRB passed forward, was putting some firewalls in there so people aren't having those discussions. And it's really very interesting, and it's really, you know, all of this is constitutionally sound. We have a slew of court cases and opinions that back up the proposal as we did it this way, to where we're not stomping on anybody's First Amendment rights. Everybody can still have their free speech, but when you're talking about spending money in elections, then we do require that disclosure and some sort of firewall. Because, again, the PACs can raise unlimited money if they're independent. So that's why that comes into play with a candidate, because they can't raise unlimited money.
So that's the reason. I mean, because when, you know, if you're looking at the situation and you say, oh, John Doe is running for city council and the PAC is supporting him, and yet they're not allowed to coordinate with each other, on the face of it, that doesn't even make any sense because they have the same goal.
Right, right. And again, that's because there's different kinds of PACs. So to create their own PAC can be one thing, where they do have contribution limits, but it's the totally independent PAC, and that's where the coordination comes in. It comes in when the PAC can raise unlimited money. Because as we know, I mean, PACs can donate to candidates, candidates can donate to PACs. It's just that now that, thanks to Citizens United, we have the super PAC, which is the really independent one that can raise unlimited money. And so, again, this, you know, I always make a joke that I really am Phi Beta Kappa, and this is the densest, most hardest thing ever to get your head around sometimes. Because we have not just state law, but then we have federal law and then local laws, which do not agree with each other. So people can watch Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and say, hey, they can't coordinate. People can't coordinate. I saw it. Well, yeah, that's at a federal level. But at a state level, we don't have coordination even in our language right now.
So on the 29th of July, which is the next Santa Fe City Council meeting, some proposals will be introduced that the City Council will then have the chance to vote on, which would basically do these things that you're saying, which is regulate the coordination between PACs and campaigns, and would also deal with the issue of matching funds. Those are the two things that are being looked at.
Absolutely. Those are the two things that are being looked at. And so we're just encouraging folks in Santa Fe to contact their counselors now and ask them to support this. And then come have a fun time on Wednesday, July 29th, and support this in person at the council meeting.
Vicki Harrison, you're executive director of Common Cause New Mexico. What are the other things that Common Cause is doing here in the state?
We are also working to do the same thing in Albuquerque, is updating their public financing system and fixing their disclosure issues. We are also just presented a proposal last week to the Las Cruces City Council about doing a public financing system there. We are working statewide on we've got 10 priority bills, everything from disclosure and public financing to an ethics commission, an independent redistricting commission, open primaries. We also do election protection. And so we are just constantly busy, whether it's at the municipal level or the state level.
If people would like to find out more, they can go to nm.commoncause.org. And CommonCause.org is the national organization. You can also find out more about that. Vicki Harrison is Executive Director of Common Cause New Mexico. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.